This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Please listen to verse 255 of chapter Baqarah, recited by Mr. Ali Askar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahu la ilaha illa
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Allah is He, besides whom there is no God, the ever-living, the self-subsisting, by whom all subsist. Slumber does not overtake Him, nor sleep. Whatever is in the heavens and whatever is in the earth is His. Who is He that can intercede with Him but by His permission? He knows what is before them and what is behind them, and they cannot comprehend anything out of His knowledge except what He pleases. His knowledge extends over the heavens and the earth, and the preservation of them both tires Him not. and He is the Most High, the Great.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
United Kingdom finally leaves the European Union, putting an end to its 48-year partnership with the bloc. And people around the world mark the start of 2021 like no other year, under the shadow of COVID-19, as lockdowns and curfews curtail celebrations. Brazil reports more than 1,000 new coronavirus deaths for the third day in a row amid a resurgence of the pandemic in the South American country. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iran has issued a stern warning to the United Nations Security Council about the United States' recent provocative moves in the Persian Gulf. In a letter to the Council, Iran's permanent mission to the UN said the U.S. has ramped up its military presence and activities in the region in recent weeks. It raised the alarm over what it called U.S. warmongering tendencies, adding that Washington must bear the full responsibility of these consequences. The letter also echoed Iran Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif's remarks, who said Iran does not seek war but will openly and directly defend its people, security, and vital interests. Tensions in the region escalated after U.S. President Donald Trump late last month threatened retaliation. The United Kingdom has officially left the European Union after a long battle with the bloc to secure a trade deal. Britain cut all ties with the EU from 2300 GMT on Thursday, when it left Europe's single market and customs union. London managed to forge a trade agreement with Brussels last week to avoid a no-deal exit. Prime Minister Boris Johnson described the departure as a new beginning for the UK, while keeping the EU as the country's biggest ally. Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon, however, told Europe to, quote, keep the lights on because Scotland will be back soon. Brexit has dominated British politics since the country's close vote to leave the bloc in June 2016. Political commentator Jonathan Fryer says the UK's official exit from the European Union is a big loss for Britain, and the situation is far from settled.
Yes, that's correct. The situation is still far from settled. Of course, a lot of people in Britain are relieved that the Brexit debate is over. It's taken us over 4 years to get to this stage, and now we have formally left the European Union, the single market, etc. But it's going to take years to work out details of various trade negotiations, because although we have left with a deal, as Mr. Johnson is so proud to say, it's only the outlines of a deal, really, and there will be very intense negotiations, particularly on an area like financial services, which covers about 80% of the British economy and has still not been settled at all. For the last 40 years or so, British citizens have been able to travel, work, study, and live in other European Union member states without any extra visas or paperwork to do, whereas now we've lost that. All our freedom of movement is gone. All we can do is visit as tourists for a limited period of time, up to 90 days in any 180-day period.
Millions across the world are marking the beginning of 2021 with celebrations at the stroke of midnight.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Mass crowds gathered along the Jumeirah beach as the fireworks lit up the United Arab Emirates Burj Khalifa in Dubai. Lights danced across the Red Square in the Russian capital Moscow, this year empty of spectators due to COVID-19 restrictions. Fireworks displays took place in the iconic Sky Tower in New Zealand's largest city of Auckland. Similar events were also held in Australia's major cities, including Sydney. People mostly watched these displays from home as they bid farewell to a tumultuous year plagued by the coronavirus pandemic. The coronavirus pandemic is raging on across Europe, with several countries still reporting a large number of infections and deaths. Italy reported 555 more coronavirus deaths on Thursday, rising its total tally to over 74,000. The southern number of infections also rose by nearly 23,500, bringing the total number of confirmed cases to 2.1 million. In the UK, officials have registered 964 more deaths and nearly 56,000 new infections. In Germany, the government has warned that the health crisis will extend into the new year.
Liebe Mitbürgerinnen, liebe Mitbürger.
These days and these weeks, there is nothing to gloss over, are difficult times for our country, and that is going to last for a good while yet. It will be up to all of us for quite some time how we get through this pandemic. Winter is and remains difficult.
Angela Merkel's comments come as Germany has seen an upward trend in the number of infections over the past weeks. The country has reported more than 32,500 new cases, raising its total tally to over 1.7 million. The death toll there has also risen by nearly 1,000 to a top 33,000. Brazil has recorded over 1,000 new fatalities from COVID-19, taking its overall death toll to more than 194,000. The South American country has also registered over 56,000 daily cases, bringing its total infections since the beginning of the pandemic to more than 7.6 million. Moreover, a Brazilian lab has reported that two cases of the new highly contagious coronavirus variant and urged a reinforcement of quarantine measures for travelers coming from Europe. Americans' assessment of the national economy, buying climate, and their personal finances has all worsened amid the surge of COVID-19 in the country. The Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index fell to its lowest since August. The sentiment for index, national economy also tumbled to its lowest since early July, following three consecutive weeks of decline. The measure of attitudes about personal finances plummeted to a four-month low. The pandemic has not only taken a heavy toll on the U.S. economy, but also on American people. The U.S. remains the world's worst-hit country, with over 345,000 deaths and about nearly 20 million cases so far. At least 140 Republican members of the U.S. House of Representatives reportedly plan to support President Donald Trump's efforts to overturn election results. U.S. media quoted two House Republicans as saying that the 140 lawmakers will object to certification of Joe Biden's Electoral College victory when Congress convenes next week. On Wednesday, Republican Josh Hawley of Missouri became the first senator to publicly confirm plans to object to the November 3rd election results. That will force lawmakers in both the House and the Senate to vote on whether to accept the results, so likely only delaying the affirmation of Biden's victory. Trump has refused to concede to Biden, citing election fraud. He has urged his supporters to descend upon Washington on January 6th to pressure lawmakers not to certify Biden's win. The Israeli regime's security apparatus has announced that multiple private and official entities have become victims to a sophisticated cyber attack. Reports suggest that hackers demanded a ransom in Bitcoin or face an embarrassing information leak.
The Israeli regime has always prided itself on being the home of the latest cyber technology, boasting about its capabilities in both aggressive and defensive cyber warfare. However, it seems that the regime has counted its eggs a little too early, as a sophisticated hack has shown the real side of Israeli cybersecurity. The hack, which appears to have taken place over a period of months, appears to be from a source known as PagerKey, with the hackers deploying a form of highly sophisticated ransomware designed to extract high quantities of information from its target, as well as demanding £100,000 in Bitcoin to stop leaks going public. It seems that the hack targeted a cybersecurity company by the name of Portnox, which itself appears to be a major provider of cybersecurity to multiple Israeli regime offices, including the Israeli aerospace industry, El Al, Bezaq, and Clalit Healthcare, many of which have direct links to the Israeli regime and defense systems. Evidence also suggests that much of the information which is threatening to be leaked contains secret information about various Israeli defense networks and companies, which, although not apparent to what exact details are involved, could see highly classified and sensitive Israeli secrets flooded into the public domain. A spokesman for another Israeli cybersecurity company, Clear Sky, announced that the damage done by the hackers has caused significant damage to the Israeli regime and has pointed the finger of blame at Iran as the origin of the attack, raising the question as to just what right does Israel have to put the onus on Iran after the acts the Israeli regime has committed on the country, including, of course, the famous Stuxnet bug, which targeted Iran's peaceful civilian nuclear program.
Even if Iranians were responsible for this latest cyber attack, and indeed the Israeli press has not ascertained culpability yet, and so it said clearly that it can't determine whether or not Iranians were involved, but even if Iranians were involved in this latest cyber attack, Israel would be in no position to complain about it, having taken the cyber gloves off, if you will, by initiating cyber war directly against Iran in 2009 and 10 with the Stuxnet sabotage cyber campaign. This was a campaign of the United States and Israel under the code name Operation Olympic Games, which was designed to destroy elements of Iran's civilian nuclear energy program.
The complexity of the attacks has been acknowledged by the Israeli security services, labeling the attackers as extremely patient, highly sophisticated, and forensically aware of their actions. With such an appraisal, as the Israeli regime that thrives on its reputation as a pioneer in cyber warfare lost its reputation, exposing it as a vulnerable and easy target that appears to be.
The finger of blame has been pointed at Iran yet again, this time by the Israeli regime. Yet just earlier this month, the US also pointed towards Iran for a series of hacks that were alleged to have breached US voting procedures and officials, something that Iran denied as nonsense. But it seems that Israel is no stranger to cyber attacks themselves, with others predating the PagerKey attack. Earlier this year, more than 1,000 Israeli websites were hacked, with images of Tel Aviv in flames, warning Israel that the countdown to destruction had begun, with the Israeli building up a host of enemies due to its hostile actions around the world, from the displacement of people in Palestine to the participation of acts of state-sponsored terrorism, Is it any wonder that Tel Aviv is on the radar of multiple hackers from unknown locations, with such attacks proving that the Israeli regime is both ill-equipped to deal with attacks and too hasty in claiming to be a world leader in security-related issues? Has the regime then lost its place at the top of the charts when it comes to cyber and electronic technology?
I believe that this latest hack demonstrates that truly all systems are vulnerable to potential cyber attack. And considering the fact that Israel prides itself so much on its high technology and its cybersecurity, this just proves that even the Israeli cybersecurity can be broken. And so this raises the question, why play with fire, especially when fire will be fought with fire?
There's no doubt that the hack is, and may further yet to prove, a huge embarrassment for the Israeli regime, in particular as the details of the information obtained is yet to be revealed by the hackers and is similar in nature to a recent hack on US bodies, which the US alleged originated from Russia. Yet with allegations flying around, the priority now for the Israeli regime is to hope that the information obtained does not fall into the public domain and further shame the regime that appears to have no shame.
The year 2020 was filled with exceptionally significant incidents, from massive protests to war and destruction. Many people believe that the ongoing COVID pandemic could put a stop to these events, but it didn't. Let's take a look at some of the most noticeable incidents of the past 12 months.
The United States and the Taliban signed a peace agreement in Doha, Qatar. Under the deal, which was officially titled the Agreement for Bringing Peace to Afghanistan, it was agreed by the US to withdraw all American and NATO troops from Afghanistan. The Taliban also pledged to prevent Al-Qaeda from operating in areas under Taliban control and to hold talks with the Afghan government. Right after signing the peace deal, the Taliban resumed their attacks. The International Criminal Court ruled that its chief prosecutor could open an investigation into allegations of war crimes in Afghanistan, including any that may have been committed by US soldiers. It was the first time the ICC granted permission to its prosecutor to probe American troops. A devastating explosion in Lebanon's capital, Beirut, killed over 200 people and injured thousands more. A large amount of ammonium nitrate stored in a warehouse at the port exploded. The blast caused $15 billion in property damage and left an estimated 300,000 people homeless. The Lebanese government declared a 2-week state of emergency in response to the tragedy and later resigned under pressure. The resignation came after protests erupted across Lebanon against the government for its failure to prevent the disaster. The United Arab Emirates declared a US-brokered normalization deal with Israel. The UAE became the third Arab country after Egypt and Jordan, and the first Persian Gulf nation to agree to formally normalize its relations with Israel. Less than a month later, Bahrain followed the UAE's footsteps and agreed to normalize relations with Israel. Khartoum declared signing a normalization agreement with Israel. And in December, Morocco joined the list of Arab nations that normalized relations with Israel. The US-backed normalization deals sparked widespread criticism across Palestine and the Muslim world in general. It has been described as treachery, stab in the back, and an endorsement of Israeli aggression against Palestinians. Yemen's military launched a successful missile attack on a station operated by Saudi oil giant Aramco in the country's Red Sea city of Jeddah. Yemen's army said the attack was a legitimate response to Saudi crimes and aggression against the Arab country. Yemen has been devastated by a deadly Saudi-led war launched in March 2015.
The Sultan of Oman, Qaboos bin Said, died aged 79. Haytham bin Tariq was sworn in as his successor. Emir of Kuwait, Sheikh Sabah al-Sabah, died at the age of 91. Crown Prince Nawaf al-Ahmad al-Jabr al-Sabah was named his successor.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive, and make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans, and muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Great hero, general of hearts. The former commander of the IRGC Quds Force, Lieutenant General Massem Soleimani, the deputy commander of the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Forces, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandes, and their 8 companions attained martyrdom on 3rd of January 2020 in an act of terrorism near Baghdad Airport, an act of terrorism which was directly ordered by the outgoing criminal U.S. President Donald Trump. Indeed, Donald Trump started 2020 by ordering an act of terrorism. The U.S. regime committed an unpardonable crime which will cost it dearly. After the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandes, the U.S. Defense Department, the Pentagon, confirmed in a statement that this act of terrorism had been ordered by President Donald Trump himself. General Qasem Soleimani did a very great job and perpetuated his name in history by defeating the Daesh terrorists and frustrating America's separatist designs. This U.S. terrorist attack can be viewed from 2 perspectives. First, the heinous crime should receive its proportionate response. Of course, the Islamic Republic of Iran preserves this definite right. According to international and legal rules, the Islamic Republic of Iran has the right of reprisal to this criminal U.S. act. This has been underlined in Article 51 of the United Nations Charter. Iran has also the right to refer this act of terrorism to qualified international institutions, especially the United Nations General Assembly. Thus, the Islamic Republic of Iran's diplomatic mission at the United Nations declared its strongly worded protest to the criminal act of the U.S. terrorist army in a letter handed to the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, reiterating its right to retaliate. The Islamic Republic of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, examining all the different aspects of Martyr Soleimani's assassination, made the necessary decisions to retaliate appropriately in relation to this U.S. act of terrorism. The commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, Major General Hossein Salami, said in a speech in Tehran, "The revenge for martyr General Soleimani is definite, serious, and real. And all those who have had a direct or indirect role in the assassination of this great general will be targeted, and this is a serious message." The second aspect of General Soleimani's assassination is that this act of terrorism should be followed through in international courts of law. This act of terrorism was a clear violation of international laws and regulations, and also a clear violation of the United Nations Charter, including Iraq's national sovereignty, violation of the immunity of officials, and infringement of Iran's international rights. Ironically, the United States has never respected or observed international laws, and it has been acting unlawfully. Yet Donald Trump's heedlessness towards international laws made it further clear that Washington's official policy is based on recognition of state-sponsored terrorism and breach of international laws and regulations. This has been official U.S. policy for decades, but assassinating the world-renowned anti-terror commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani laid bare the real face of the United States for the peoples of the world. According to international law, the Iraqi government has the right to sue the United States for violating its sovereignty. As the Islamic Republic of Iran has announced time and again, it will not cease to follow up the legal case for this act of terrorism against the great Iranian general, Martyr Soleimani. Iran will pursue this case in international courts of law, and it will neither pardon nor forget this dastardly act of terrorism. The Islamic Republic of Iran is determined to legally pursue the case against the United States act of terrorism, and Iran will certainly pursue this case within the United Nations General Assembly and the UN Security Council. There is indisputable evidence which shows clearly Washington's role in the terrorist assassination of top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani. The Supreme Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, referring to the fact that this kind of crime and assassination of leaders of resistance used to belong to the Zionist regime of Israel, reiterated that the Americans have committed a lot of crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan, but this time the U.S. President himself has confessed that we are terrorists, where there is no scandal worse than this one. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, referring to the fact that this kind of crime and assassination of the leaders of the resistance movement used to belong to the Zionist regime of Israel, reiterated that the Americans have openly admitted that they have committed a lot of crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan, but this time the U.S. President himself has openly confessed that we are the terrorists, and there is no scandal worse than this one. The leader, pointing to the revenge and the attack that was carried out on Ain al-Assad base on 8th of January 2020, in retaliation for this U.S. terrorist move, stressed that such attacks will not suffice for reciprocation. He made it clear, "What is important is that the corruption-inducing presence of the United States should end in this region. They have caused wars, sedition, destruction, division, and devastation of infrastructure. And wherever the Americans have gone in the world, they have done the same, whilst they insist on continuing this trend in Iran." Well, dear listeners, the fact is that nations have woken up and cannot tolerate the presence of this source of corruption amongst their countries. They have chosen the path of resistance against the arrogant powers and against great oppression. World public opinion is also waking up against the source of every misery in the world, the United States and its minions and partners in crime. The peoples of the world have come to know that the United States is the biggest violator of international laws and norms, and the source of every crime all over the world.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Ministry.
Soleimani was a name that the enemy had always used in a matter of caution and anticipation. Caution in dealing with the commander in the battlefield and anticipation which he brought upon his enemies from planning maneuvers that no one expected. Martyr Qasem Soleimani's victories shook the foundation of the White House in Washington and shocked the Zionist Israeli entity inside the occupied Palestinian territories. In short, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani was a brigade of terror for the enemies of the Axis of Resistance. Commemorating the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Haj Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, we cannot but remember and admire their steadfastness in the war against terrorism in the region of West Asia. Commander Soleimani was brutally assassinated in an illegal extrajudicial war crime by Donald Trump on behalf of American imperialism, on behalf of NATO, on behalf of Israel, and on behalf of Saudi Arabia and the Persian Gulf states in pursuance of a greater Israel and Western hegemony over the entire region of West Asia. His crime in the eyes of the aggressor was to stand up for justice, to stand up for peace, and to stand against sanctions, regime change wars, occupation, illegal invasions, and imperialist colonial aggression. From Gaza to Beirut, Damascus, Baghdad, and Sana'a, Haj Qasem sought to defend the people from Western aggression. By defending Palestine, the martyr Soleimani was defending freedom, justice, and peace. By defending Syria, he was helping to save lives. By creating a rapprochement with Iraq, who the West used as a proxy war against Iran in order to weaken both countries to benefit Israel, Haj Qasem was able to heal old wounds and unify those who want peace against those who seek war. His martyrdom saddened the heart of every soul in this world. Yet, as a result of Haj Qasem's martyrdom, the regional allied forces of the resistance have strengthened steadily this year, mainly due to the steadfastness of its members and its leadership, but also because of the errors of the enemy in assassinating a hero warrior like Lieutenant General Martyr Qasem Soleimani. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. It has been 1 year since martyr Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani's assassination.
Martyr Soleimani, who lived his life in the path of resistance and fight against terrorist groups in West Asia, sought to bring peace and security to the region, which is why he was targeted by the Western terror machine to begin with. Martyr Soleimani gave his life to bring unity to the resistance factions all across the region, from Palestine to Lebanon, Syria to Iraq, and all the way to Yemen. His life and martyrdom became a legacy to the entire axis of resistance. To discuss this issue, with us from Beirut is Dr. Ibrahim Moussaoui, Lebanese Member of Parliament with the loyalty to the resistance bloc, Hezbollah. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Moussaoui. Now,
a pleasure. Thank you.
The role of General Qasem Soleimani's military planning, as well as his organized strategy and his cleverness in defeating Daesh and maybe declaring victory during his life against these terrorist groups is absolutely undeniable. But how has his martyrdom affected the continuous work of the resistance across the region of West Asia?
Well, first of all, thank you for giving the opportunity to be present at your program. This is one thing. And the other thing, I want to extend my congratulations and condolences at the same time, just like what Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, said yesterday. We live in a nation, we live in an ummah where the things are mixed together. We pay condolences to his family, and we are very grateful for all the significant achievements that have been set by his sacrifice, by his attachment, this mold and fusion into the path of the resistance, that they cannot be dissociated whatsoever. Just like what you mentioned in your introduction, you're talking about General Soleimani, you're talking about a significant person, someone who has no peer whatsoever. He has given the resistance movement, the people who are downtrodden and oppressed, and more importantly, humanity. And here when we talk about humanity, we do no exaggeration. Why? Because ever since this creation has come into existence with the God, the Creator, the Omnipotent, the Omnipresent, we have two paths, the path of right, the path of wrong. We have just and we have oppression. We have always we have bad and we have good things, bad and good. He has sided, he has lined with the path of good and the truth and peace. In order to bring peace to the people, you have to fight the tyrants. This was the mission of the prophets. This was the mission of the imams. This was the mission of all of the good people all across the world. While he was alive, he has given lessons to all of those who work in the path of the resistance. And when he got martyrdom, the thing that he craved, he was always praying for his God to embrace martyrdom, and he got it in this very significant and distinguished way. He has given a lesson to be remembered by generations, and I believe it's our mission. He has done his mission properly, but it is our task, it's our duty, it's our job that we continue to do our best to survive with his martyrdom. What do I mean by this? It is not that Qasem Soleimani wants us to make him survive, to make a revivalism for his sacrifice, for his martyrdom. It is his blood which was so huge, it is his sacrifice which was so immense, that dictates upon us and put us on a responsibility to continue this path. He has set a ceiling, a level of sacrifice and martyrdom, and more importantly, victory. You did say something about his victory against the Daeshites, against Daesh, and against the American plots in the region. But what's so important also is that he has been able, through his persistence and unshakable conviction of the resistance, to do the almost impossible. You know, this is what's being done now with the resistance in Lebanon. Sayyid Nasrallah yesterday has just pinpointed that if you are talking about the kind of rockets, the pinpoint rockets, the very delicate, the very precise rockets, that you're doing your best to prevent the Lebanese resistance, the Islamic resistance, from having it, I tell you that we have accumulated, like we have two times more than what we used to have a year ago.
This is what I want to discuss with you now as a member of parliament.
So if you allow me just to continue the idea, the thing is that this determination, this resolve that has been put forth by Martyr Qasim Soleimani is a heritage, is a legacy, is something that we have to hold tight to our hearts and to our minds and to our brains and to our determination and resolve for the generations to come that the impossible can be done when we have people, when we have leaders like Qasim Soleimani. And this is something that will be handed from generation to generation till we embrace the last victory, inshallah.
This is what I want to talk about, the legacy, especially as you being part, as I mentioned, a member of parliament representing Hezbollah, the Lebanese resistance, the Lebanese Islamic resistance. How do you think the legacy of the likes of a warrior like Lieutenant General Qasim Soleimani has affected the performance of your local Lebanese resistance?
You're totally right, actually. When you see someone who has this self-denial, he is altruist, he sacrifices himself, he works day and night, he never recognizes anything of the halal pleasures of life, he is away from his family, he's away from everything, only to help any oppressed. You know, we know very well, and we all remember the Mount of Sinjar, where Yazidis, actually, they were downtrodden and they were mutilated, they were killed, they were cleansed by Daesh. Who helped them? The Kurds as well in Iraq. All those who shouted for help, the Soleimani ears were there, the Iranian ears of the Islamic Republic of Iran, of this revolution, of the oppressed, was there to help people everywhere in the world. We all remember here in Lebanon, we remember Bosnia and Herzegovina, when the Iranians helped there. We remember Palestine, we remember everywhere. That's why the kind of legacy and heritage, even if we are working now in the parliament, some may be working like yourself or others in the media front, in the social media, all kinds of media. Some people would work now as they work in the medical field with this now coronavirus, and at certain times, all those who are wounded or mutilated by the Israeli aggressions, raids, whatever. We should excel because Qasim Soleimani has set an exemplary model, a model of sacrifice for everyone who would work in every kind of field in order to excel. And I would suggest, really, we have to have this kind of Soleimani icon, like a medal for everyone who excels in his field. We should, not the Islamic Republic of Iran. We are those who benefited from his blood, from his sacrifices, more than anyone else. He embodies and dramatizes and he gives an example about the Islamic Revolution, the Islamic Republic. But we, the people of all of this axis of the resistance, people of humanity, people of goodness, should pay homage, should pay tribute to his sacrifices and make a kind of Soleimani badge, Soleimani symbol, Soleimani icon, Soleimani honor at every level of and field of service to humanity. And this is something that should be set as an exemplary model, and everyone should sacrifice and should persist and should work with honor in order to reach this stage.
Well, the allied forces of the resistance across the region of West Asia, from Palestine to Lebanon to Syria to Baghdad, even to Sana'a, they all vowed revenge for the assassinations of both Lieutenant General Qasim Soleimani and Deputy Director of the PMU, Hash Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Can you maybe explain to the Western public who follows on through with these news, why did these diverse resistance factions find that it's their responsibility to retaliate against those responsible who planned and targeted, in the end, a top Iranian general?
Simply because those who perpetrated, those the murderers, the assassins who assassinated Soleimani, they are in the evil front. They represent the front of evil. They represent the front of oppression. They represent the front of finishing the human life. That's why all those who are in the other front, they are in the path of right, in the path of piety, of goodness. They want, it's not a matter of revenge for someone who has been assassinated. Now Qasim Soleimani is in the bounties of Allah. He is in heaven, inshallah. with all the prophets, with all of the other martyrs, with Imam Khomeini, with Sayyid Abbas al-Musa, with all those who were before him. But we in this place in the world that we continue this mission, we should, when you talk about revenge, we're talking about embodying the very message that he wanted to send to this world. Well, when we are in this world, we have always to stick to our rights, to help the oppressed, to fight the oppression, to fight the occupation, and this is our mission here. That's why when you hear them all over the France, from Palestine to Lebanon to Iraq to Syria to Yemen, even everywhere in the world, when you listen to them saying they want to avenge, they want the justice to take place. Justice leads to peace, justice leads to mercy, and this is the mission. It's not a matter of revenge, it's a matter of continuing the path of supporting the oppressed, of helping the rightful people and fighting the oppression and the evil.
Well, Member of Parliament, Dr. Ibrahim Moussa, we thank you very much for joining us. You represent the loyalty to the resistance bloc, Hezbollah. Thank you for your contribution to our
pleasure.
Special show in commemoration of the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Please stay tuned. We will continue with this topic more.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
U.S. bases, warships, and troops are all still potential targets for retaliation after the assassination of Qasem Soleimani. This is a threat issued not only by the Islamic Republic of Iran, but also by the resistance factions in West Asia that were operating under the command of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. This constant wave of threats against any U.S. presence aims to drive all U.S. personnel from West Asia. Qasem Soleimani's legacy in this following report.
There's no doubt that the assassination of the two leaders, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Deputy Director of the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, was a great and painful loss for everyone who knows the pivotal role that the two men distinguished in building resistance forces and confronting the American Western Zionist project to control the region and subject its people to a policy of hegemony, extortion, and brutal authoritarianism. History will preserve Martyr Soleimani's role, which he mirrored both on the battlefield and in many political arenas. His presence in West Asia emerged on the regional map in the form of direct engagement by establishing combat formations, building Al-Quds Force, and the resistance factions that in the last decade have fought the largest battles to thwart American hegemony. The United States intended to establish dozens of Takfiri terrorist groups by importing mercenaries from all across the world in order to destroy the infrastructure of the countries of the region and their societies. However, the mentality of a great leader like Haj Qasem Soleimani laid the methodological and practical foundations for building a system of resistance and opening up all prospects for development and growth before it. His effort kept pace with the process of harvesting achievements and the accumulation of actual victories that protected the region from the ravages of submission and dependence on the colonial will. And if individuals in the making of history have a prominent and influential mark that rises to the basic and decisive level in determining the course of major events and developments, then Martyr Qasem Soleimani's value and position melted down in building the ideological structure and the common belief held by every resistance fighter. This great leader established an integrated philosophy through which the values, principles, and ideals of the path of resistance were embodied. As such, the Soleimani Fighting Academy became center stage, guiding and inspiring an entire generation of defenders of righteousness. similar to those who contributed with martyr Imad Mughniye, martyr Samir al-Qantar, martyr Mustafa Badruddin, and others in generating victory, formulating the deterrence balance, and constructing a new era deserving of these great leaders.
To discuss this issue with us from California is Mr. Paul Larudi, former U.S. advisor in West Asia. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Paul, especially on this first anniversary of commemorating the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. We heard, everyone heard, Iran's leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, renewing his promise for revenge in response to the United States assassination of Hajj Qasem Soleimani. That threat is definitely being taken seriously. It's being taken very seriously by the U.S., especially after the second mistake that they did by assassinating Iran's top nuclear physicist, Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. How do you think that this threat will affect the U.S. performance, maybe, in the region of West Asia?
Well, as you might imagine, the United States would not agree that it made any mistakes in the region, and it very deliberately assassinated General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. And I think that we have to accept that, in fact, even behind the scenes, they don't feel that they've made a mistake. What they've done is, from their point of view, is to strike a blow against Iran and to demonstrate that Iran is living dangerously, if you like. I mean, this is how they think of it. But nevertheless, they also realize that they are living under more threat than they have in the past. And we've seen the result of that. First of all, with the missile strikes on Ayn al-Assad air base a year ago. And this is what the United States, as a result of that, consolidated its forces, brought in all the other areas in which they had their troops, and consolidated them in one area. So this is one consequence. And they're basically more cautious than they had been in the past. And
if you'll allow me here, for several decades before even Martyr Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani thwarted and later defeated Daesh, he and the Al-Quds forces had done exemplary work in supporting the resistance allied forces stretching from Gaza to Beirut. This made Israel stand on its tiptoes for several years. Do you think that his martyrdom maybe released pressure off of the Israeli entity in the region, or is it the other way around?
Exactly. It is the other way around. Israel feels more pressure than it had in the past. And that's why it's using more remote operations. For example, its strikes in Syria generally take place either from so-called Israeli territory, or more typically from in the airspace above Lebanon. So it's being more cautious. The other thing is that they are using their what I would call U.S. and French proxies to put pressure on Lebanon to try to diminish the effect, the influence, and the power of Hezbollah. That's obviously not going to work. But these are some of the remedies, and I personally, I think these are desperate measures on the part of Israel and the United States, for that matter.
Well, after the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Hajj Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, the Deputy Director of the Popular Mobilization Units of Iraq, the Iraqi parliament passed a motion to expel U.S. forces and troops outside Iraq. There are two scenarios here. Either the U.S. abides by it and leaves, or it does not and withdraws to Iraqi Kurdistan region, solely recognizing its independence, just like they did with the Sahara, only the U.S. actually recognized the independence. However, won't the latter just maybe paint every American and maybe Kurd in Iraq with maybe a bullseye on his back.
Well, that's exactly why they won't do it. So will they leave? And their alternative is really just to dig in.
Mm-hmm.
But keeping the U.S. forces based in Iraq, and I don't mean Iraqi Kurdistan, this is a trophy. Iraq is a trophy for the U.S. They won a war. They imposed their will upon Iraq. To back out of it is a defeat. And so I it's possible that they will do it, but I think it's unlikely. They would do so very reluctantly.
Well, while the commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard said that there are as many as 13 scenarios that Iran is looking at for retaliation against the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, it seems that the response will be long drawn. It will not be to please the online commentators or those who expect some knee-jerk reactions. It will be a war of attrition. Iran will